For more information about Ancient Dragon Zen Gate and Tygon's teaching, please visit us at ancientdragon.org.
Good evening, and welcome everyone. I want to continue speaking about something I was talking about yesterday morning. Several of you were here, and I'm going to review a little bit of what I said yesterday, which has to do with the Mahayana Buddhist sutras, the scriptures of the bodhisattvas, the enlightening beings, which is the background very much of our Zen practice. Really of Zazen. And I want to talk about this worldview and how strange it is. And I want to talk about it in connection with some of the strangeness of some aspect of modern science. So some disclaimers first. Well, okay, first I'm going to just say that this in some ways has to do with this jewel Mara Samadhi, precious Mara Samadhi that we just chanted, because I've been writing about this and this Dharma of Suchness that Dongshan talks about. Just almost finished the chapter in my Dongshan book on this text, and thinking about this suchness and what is this and what does it have to do with our practice and how do we practice this. And also, I talk often about Dogen and this strange sentence in one of his first writings about the meaning of Zazen when one person displays Buddha Mudra with their whole body and mind for even a little while. He says, in the self-fulfillment samadhi, all of space becomes enlightened. And you know, so what does this mean? You know, well, this relates to self and environment and our interconnectedness with everything. And anyway, Zazen in our practice, of course, has to do with relieving suffering beings and awakening and our connection with all beings and, of course, finding our own personal inner calm and settledness and settling and this ongoing process of that. But it's also about something much deeper, which we can't completely understand. And Dogen says that, and the Bodhisattva Sutras say that, and in many, many ways. So, yet this is so important to our practice, and I think it's not something that is part of how we think of Zen practice in the West mostly. It's there in all of Asia, just in terms of the context of going to temples in Asia and seeing all these Buddhist images and all the imagery that's part of Asian Buddhist culture. So I started yesterday I talked about a number of the images about this in some of the Mahayana Sutras, the Vimalakirti Sutra and the Lotus Sutra and the Flower Ornament Sutra. So I'm going to mention a few of those. But I also want to connect this up today with modern or current theoretical physics, which a bunch of disclaimers. I don't understand physics at all. I'm reading a few things about it and just starting to read, and some of you understand this much better than I do. And, you know, maybe in, you know, several months or 6 months I could do a much more coherent talk about this if I keep reading this stuff. And yet, just some of the stuff that I've come across is so interesting in the way that it seems to me to connect up with some of these images of, we could say, cosmology or worldview in the Mahayana Sutras that I thought I'd say something about it and see what any of you had to say. So the other disclaimer is that since I've been studying this, trying to read about this a little bit, I seem to come across physicists. There's a few of them down in Hyde Park at the group that Nyozan leads. I was there last Wednesday. Anyway, there was a fellow who's started sitting there who's a graduate student or something there, and said he does cosmology, but he studies the background radiation from the Big Bang, but he does it as an astronomer. Anyway, most people I've encountered who do physics do much more practical things than this theoretical stuff. Anyway, okay, disclaimers aside. Just a sampling of what the sutras say about this suchness, this inconceivability or thusness, this quality of reality. So, for example, a few examples. In the Vimalakirti Sutra, the sutra about the great enlightened layman from the time of Shakyamuni Buddha, 2,500 years ago, more enlightened than all of the monk disciples of the Buddha. There are many amazing things that happen in that scripture, but one of the things that happens in that and many other scriptures is that there are all these bodhisattvas who come from quote-unquote different world systems, from various Buddha fields, great distances away, vast distances away from this. And what does that mean? Does that mean from different galaxies or planets or solar systems? Well, that's maybe one way to understand it, but I think there's something else going on. There's one story where the Buddha from a distant, there's huge numbers of, you know, if you crush all the atoms and all the worlds between this world and that Buddha field and drop one atom every million whatever's between there and now, that's how far away it is or something like that. There's these huge distances and in space and time that are depicted in these sutras. Anyway, so there's these bodhisattvas who come from there to hear Shakyamuni or to see Vimalakirti in this sutra, and the Buddha in that world system says that when you get there, don't be disrespectful to those bodhisattvas, even though they're really puny, even though they're really tiny, because you know they live in the Saha world, and which is our Buddha field, which is the world of endurance, and so they're very advanced bodhisattvas, even though they seem tiny and you know, not so radiant or anything, but they really have practice hard because it's a very different world, difficult world to practice in. And there are other things they talk about. And they talk about all the different ways that Buddhas and all these different Buddha fields teach. Some of them teach by talking, like some of us do, and some of them teach by just lights emanating from their body, and some of them teach by silence, and some of them teach with fragrances. They emanate various fragrances, and the assembly studies the Dharma by studying the different fragrances. So there's all different kinds of ways. And then there's this thing about that Vimalakirti himself, I'll just read you this little bit. Within these inconceivable realms, as described or demonstrated by Vimalakirti, bodhisattvas can place the vast cosmic king of mountains, Mount Sumeru, into a mustard seed without shrinking the mountain or expanding the sea. The bodhisattva in this realm can pour all the oceans into a pore of her skin without disturbing any of the fish or other creatures dwelling in the ocean. A bodhisattva living in the inconceivable may pick up a whole galaxy in his hand, toss it like a boomerang around the universe, then put it back in its place, without disturbing any of the beings therein. These maneuvers can be seen by the affected beings, but only by those who will be inspired and led into training in the Bodhisattva disciplines by witnessing these miracles. So there's all this strange stuff that goes on, and there are all these different Buddha fields and all these different worlds. So what is this about, all these different Buddha fields? Well, okay, here's... So one of the things I'm reading is a book by this fellow Brian Greene, who's a physicist and is into string theory, and he's written a number of, kind of supposedly readable books, like The Elegant Universe and The Fabric of the Cosmos, and I'm reading his most recent, The Hidden Reality, Parallel Universes and the Deep Laws of the Cosmos. And he says, he says that basically that all of the different strands, quantum mechanics and string theory and all the different versions of modern theoretical physics lead to multiple universes or parallel universes. That the word universe used to mean everything that there is. But now, in terms of modern theoretical physics, there are multiple universes. So he says, just a couple of quotes, sometimes universe still connotes absolutely everything. Sometimes it refers only to those parts of everything that someone such as you or I could, in principle, have access to. Sometimes it's applied to separate realms, ones that are partly or fully, temporarily or permanently, inaccessible to us. In this sense, the word relegates our universe to membership in a large, perhaps infinitely large, collection. In some, the parallel universe, and then he talks about parallel universes. In some, and the different, so he talks about the many major developments in fundamental theoretical physics, relativistic physics, quantum physics, cosmological physics, unified physics, computational physics, all have led us to consider one or another variety of parallel universes. And they each envision our universe as part of an unexpectedly larger whole, but the complexion of that whole and the nature of the member universes differ sharply among them. In some, the parallel universes are separated from us by enormous stretches of space or time. In others, they're hovering millimeters away. In others, still, the very notion of their location proves parochial, devoid of meaning. A similar range of possibilities manifest in the laws governing the parallel universes. So, the point of looking at this is not that we should try to escape to some more pleasant universe where John Lennon is still writing these songs or something, but, how does this... The fact of all these different worlds, I mean, in the Bodhisattva scriptures, there somehow there's a connection. So I don't know. I don't know what all of any of this means. I'm just wondering out loud. But there seems to be that in these scriptures that are the basis of our practice, really. And again, it's not about escaping to some other universe. It's about what is this reality? What are the possibilities? What are the options for our being helpful in this situation, in this world? And what does it mean that there are Buddhas and Bodhisattvas in other dimensions? Or, I don't know, we're connected to them somehow. And somehow here's this physicist talking about these parallel universes. So I don't know. I don't know if these are. I'm not trying to say that one, confirms the other or vice versa. We don't need to do that. But anyway, there's some interesting echoes. So just a few more things. There's space and there's time. So. So many interesting things about what these physicists are saying. Well, I've talked sometimes about Dogen's teaching about being time. that time is moving in many directions. Dogen, the founder of Soto Zen in the 13th century Japan, who I talk about a lot, says the time doesn't exist as some external container. The time is our time, that we are time. And that time moves from past to future, from future to past, from present to present. And that our sense of time is, you know, the time is really us. That, and we know that time is, that time is not, you know, there is clock time, there is, you know, this idea of conventional time, but also, how long was the period of Zazen today, Dave?
35 minutes.
So for some of you, it may have felt like it went on forever. You know, you just were sure that the devil had fallen asleep. For some of you, it may have gone like that. And you know, the same 35 minutes may sometimes some days may seem very long. Some days go by like that. So our sense of time has to do with us and our activity and our awareness. So we actually know that. Anyway, here's something about Einstein's connection with Dogen's being time. Again, this is from Brian Greene. Of the many things Einstein's work revealed, the fluidity of time is the hardest to grasp. Whereas everyday experience convinces us, he says, that there is an objective concept of time's passage, relativity shows this to be an artifact of life at slow speeds and weak gravity. Move near light speed or immerse yourself in a powerful gravitational field, and the familiar universal conception of time will evaporate. If you're rushing past me, things I insist happened at the same moment will appear to you to have occurred at different moments. This is an evidence of a magician's trickery or hypnotist's deception. The passage of time depends on the particulars, trajectory followed and gravity experienced of the measurer. So this is, you know, in terms of physics. He goes on to talk about they're not sure now whether the universe is finite or infinite, or various universes are finite or infinite. So he says, much as Hamlet famously declares, I could be bounded in a nutshell and count myself as a king of infinite space, each of the bubble universes, so one of the ways they talk about multiple universes is bubble universes within a wider field of that. So, anyway, each of the bubble universes appears to have finite spatial extent when examined from the outside, but infinite spatial extent when examined from the inside. Uh-huh. That's a marvelous realization. Infinite spatial extent is just what we need for a quilted parallel universe. So we can meld the quilted multiverse into the inflationary story. So he goes into various different versions of you know, universes and multiverses. The extreme disparity between the outsiders and insiders' perspectives arise because they have vastly different conceptions of time. Although the point is far from obvious, we'll now see that what appears as endless time to an outsider appears as endless space at each moment of time to an insider. Anyway, this is even maybe wilder than some of the Mahayana sutras. And just about parallel universes, just another little tidbit. The best available cosmologic theory for explaining the best available cosmological data leads us to think of ourselves as occupying one of a vast inflationary system of parallel universes, each of which harbors its own vast collection of quilted parallel universes. Cutting-edge research yields a cosmos in which there are not only parallel universes, but parallel universes. It suggests that reality is not only expansive, but abundantly expansive. So, you know, the connection really is, well, what is reality? And what does that mean to us? And, again, this can, you know, this is theoretical physics, and it can sound very theoretical, but somehow I have this feeling that just hearing about this stuff and hearing about these Buddhas and Bodhisattvas in different world, in different Buddha fields somewhere, somehow, can give us a kind of sense of different possibilities. Because it's so easy now in our world to feel overwhelmed, or like, you know, there's so many problems, or, you know, and yet we don't know what's going on. And I think that maybe is a good thing. Maybe there are more possibilities than we can imagine. So going back to the Mahayana stories, in the Flower Ornament Sutra, it taught which is a very vast sutra with all kinds of wild stuff in it, but it includes things like the Bodhisattva Samantabhadra, or universally good, entering the converse, the entering a samadhi or meditation concentration called the Lion Emerging Samadhi, which reveals to all the assembled bodhisattvas the vast array of Buddhas, lands, enlightening beings, powers of samadhis, and manifestations of teachings from past, present, and future that all exist within the oceanic Buddha lands on a single hair tip, and on every hair tip. So, you know, this is not physics in multiple universes. This is from the Bodhisattva scriptures, that in each hair tip there are these vast arrays of Bodhisattvas in multiple multiple Buddha fields, Buddha lands. And they say that is true in the sutra also, in terms of, you know, on the tip of every blade of grass. And then there's this other one, and I'm going to spend a little more time with this. This is also from the Flower Ornament Sutra, the Avatamsaka Sutra. And this is from a chapter called The Meditation of Samantabhadra, or the Bodhisattva Universally Good. And this is the samadhi called the Eminent Body of the Illuminator of Thusness. So we were just chanting about thusness, the Dharma of thusness. So this samadhi is described as being in all awakened ones, available to all Buddhas, and as containing all worlds in the universe. And I guess by that it means all the universes. And as producing all other concentration states, or all other samadhis. It contains the teachings and liberations of all Buddhas and the knowledge of all bodhisattvas, and develops enlightened virtues and vows. So it says, at the time that Samantabhadra entered this samadhi of the immanent body of the illuminator of thusness, he saw vast numbers of Buddhas in multitudinous worlds in all directions. And he also saw Buddhas within every atom in all of those worlds. I can't imagine how to visualize that. I don't think George Lucas could even think that. In front of each one of those Buddhas sat other every one of those Buddhas sat other Samantabhadra Bodhisattvas, who immediately also entered into the samadhi of the immanent body of the illuminator of thusness. So again, this is from one of these great Mahayana sutras. The Buddhas in all the myriad realms thereupon praised each Samantabhadra Bodhisattva for their great enlightening abilities, fostered by the power of the cosmic absolute Dharmakaya Buddha, Vairochana. Then the Buddhas bestowed upon every Samantabhadra omniscient knowledge of all the different worlds and their workings and their appropriate enlightening teachings. And then something happens after that, but I'm going to shift to something described in modern physics that just kind of is interesting, because it sounded sort of similar. And this is from Brian Greene's description of what he calls the inflationary multiverse, which is one of the kinds of multiverse is a kind of multiple universe, and this is a continuation of something where he has an analogy of Cartman. Do any of you know South Park? This is a cartoon figure from South Park, Cartman. Anyway, when I'm this little boy. Anyway, first the image of Cartman perched high on a mountaintop offered an analogy to an inflation field harboring significant potential energy and negative pressure. So there's all this weird stuff. There's inflationary cosmology. There's repulsive as well as attractive gravity. I don't understand either, but it's all this strange stuff. It's even maybe stranger than the stuff in the Mahayana Sutras. I don't know. But anyway, it says, whereas Cartman was perched on a single mountaintop, the inflation field had a value at each point in space. The theory posits that the inflation field starts off with the same value at each location within an initial region, and so we'd achieve a more faithful rendering of the science if we imagine something a little odd. Numerous Cartman clones perched on numerous closely packed identical mountaintops throughout spatial expanse. So, I'm sorry, that reminded me of all these Samantabhadra bodhisattvas throughout the universe. And it goes into quantum theory, but on one level, Zazen is really simple, okay? You just sit. So you can forget about all this stuff. Forget about this, everything I'm saying tonight. But it's just, I don't know, I just felt like talking about it. Anyway, in this, where I left off in terms of Samantabhadra's vision of the immanent body of the illuminator of thusness, where he's seeing all these different worlds where there were Samantabhadra bodhisattvas sitting there like little Cartmans. When this had transpired in each of the many worlds and in all of the extra atoms in each of those worlds, all of the Buddhas reached out with their right hands and patted each of the Samantabhadras in all the realms on their head. This amazing mind-boggling scene is the content of this primary samadhi of Samantabhadra. As Samantabhadra arose from this samadhi, all of the universal virtue bodhisattvas arose in every world, and all of the worlds trembled. Gentle rains of beautiful clouds and jewels, many with specific described qualities, that fell profusely upon all bodhisattvas everywhere, bestowing enlightened knowledge, techniques for teaching, and splendid illumination. So, anyway, I don't know if any of that is useful, but it just seems to me that what we get from these bodhisattva scriptures that are kind of the background, you can decide how far back you want them to be, but they're the background of our Zazen practice, of this practice of just sitting, settling down, being present, and as we do this regular sitting practice, we start to get a sense of how deeply interconnected we are to things. And the point of our practice, of course, is to express our awareness in the world for the sake of all beings. So we also have the Bodhisattva precepts and practices to help us be helpful in the world, to be aware in the world. But just this sense of how strange and dynamic a reality we exist in, I think, gives us a wider sense of possibilities. And that it's not realistic to feel overwhelmed by the difficulties of the world, because we don't really know all that there is about what's going on in our own lives as well as in people around us. And so anyway, I find having a sense of this, and, you know, maybe I don't want to study too much more about this physics. Maybe I don't need to know so much about it. But just having a sense of it, I'll look at it a little bit more. But having a sense of this, and having a sense of these visions of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas in all these different Buddha fields, maybe they're very distant, but they come and hang out here. They're somehow connected to us, with us. That's all I'm going to say. Comments, responses, questions, corrections for those of you who know about physics. Please feel free. Yes, Ben. Hi.
Just when you're talking about, I've heard the idea of the inflationary universe, I think. And I really, really like that from the Buddhist perspective, too, because it's like, in that way, we're all, no matter where we are, at the center of the universe.
Yeah.
And so it's really like, wow, how amazing and powerful is that? But it's also like, everyone else is also, every point is at the center of the universe, so it's nothing special.
Right, nothing special. Yeah, this idea of interconnectedness, which is so important on so many levels. It's important in terms of thinking about the environment and those of us who are concerned about climate change and so forth, and how we are connected. But it's not just in terms of the reality we see. It doesn't mean that we have to take care of the reality we see. But also, it's not just, you know, that these bodhisattvas are in some other planet. They're also in other dimensions right here in this room, maybe. I don't know. But this interconnectedness is really deep and strange. Other comments? I can imagine some people feel like this is, you know, irrelevant or not so helpful. It's possible too. Jeremy?
So maybe I could try to unpack a little bit, kind of this.
Jeremy knows about physics, so.
I try not to know. I think it's best not to know.
Well, I think it's best not to know too, but you know more than you. I don't know more than you don't know. Sorry.
So I think what I hear you saying is you're asking us to kind of soften our hardened, knowing mind and kind of consider the possibility, the wider possibilities that are available to us, and to use that as a help.
Yeah.
To keep us nice and bendable.
Flexible.
Keep our minds available to consider all the options we have.
Yes.
In order to free all beings.
Good. Yes.
I think that this stuff can help do that for sure. And I think one of the difficulties I have personally is I get intoxicated easily with this kind of stuff because I try to be too intellectual about it.
That's one way to get intoxicated. If you read Flower Ornament Sutra particularly, it's very, for some people, it's full of all these visions and all this flowery stuff. And if you try and figure it out, it doesn't help. But if you just like read it and just imagine this stuff, you can get really blissed out. And that's, so there's that kind of intoxication too. I think physics can do that in one way, but the Mahayana Sutras also can be very intoxicating, and that's not the point. It's not about escaping from the difficulties of our everyday reality. It's about opening up a space, a wider space in which to, as you said, in which to respond. Yes.
I was remembering yesterday, during your drama talk, you were talking about this similar stuff, and you referred to Men in Black as one of your favorite Buddhist movies.
Yes.
And I was thinking, what is he talking about? I've never heard of it referred to that way before. And then I remembered at the very end, there was that scene where...
Well, you don't want to give this away to people who haven't seen it. But the scene at the very end is very much... Huayan Buddhist, very much about the Flower and the Sutra. So I don't want to spoil it for anyone who hasn't seen that movie. So, but yeah, the scene in the very... That's just one of the aspects of that movie. Maybe everybody here... Is there anybody here? So let's not talk about it again. So I don't want to spoil it. But Men in Black is my favorite American Buddhist movie, yeah. Highly recommend. In many ways, it's a good thing. There's lots of dharma in it. It's a movie about training successors, amongst other things. Mm-hmm.